The views stated by the hosts of this podcast are opinion only and should not take the place of a qualified healthcare professional or mental health specialist. This podcast is for education and recreation. Welcome to Ask a Hag, a podcast about self-care and witchcraft in the modern world. I'm Leslie.
And I'm Allison.
And we are asked questions every day in the work that we do within our community. And this podcast is a space for us where we can share our knowledge and experience as witches and healers. This is a place where you, dear listener, can find inspiration and also feel empowered wherever you are on your journey. Welcome, welcome.
Hello, hello.
We have a very special guest today.
Oh, yeah. J. Allen Cross is with us today. Welcome, J. Allen Cross. J. Allen Cross is a hereditary witch focusing his practice on North American folk magic. He spends his time offering spiritual services, community healing, and assisting those experiencing troublesome hauntings.
Wow.
Professor Cross, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been very excited to be here.
Thank you. Well, so many things to discuss.
Oh, so many things.
Mm-hmm. Leslie and I were eating French fries. Donna was. The three of us were eating French fries
before we
got on. And we were kind of fangirling a little bit about the writings that you've been doing on, is it pathos.com?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, Pathos.
Pathos. Yes. Thank you. Yeah, there's a lot of really great content that you've put out. On that. And we, first of all, love your position on many, many, many things.
Yes.
And one of them is the term baby witch.
Yeah.
And I wanted to find out, like, kind of your feelings about that term. Where, like, why do you think it's happening? Like, how do you handle it as far as, you know, your clients and customers? Like,
I have so many things that you've shared, just screenshot on my phone.
Uh-huh.
Yes!
I know. For real.
I love that he's like placing this out there.
Yeah.
It needs to be shared. You know, and like for Allison and I, for one specifically, you were referencing, I'm sure, people that have been emailing you or DMing you about like, hey, can you basically take my hand and teach me? And it's like, hey, you know, the first step to being a witch, you have to stand on your own. You know, I didn't have a teacher. I taught myself. And I think that's so important.
To remind them of that.
Yeah. So thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Taking on, you know, the role of witch is all about self-empowerment.
Yeah.
And so it's so important that when you do strike out on this, do just that, empower yourself to, you know, actually walk the path and, you know, do the hard work on your own. Something that I'm seeing so much of these days is recently I joined a bunch of Facebook witch groups to try and, you know, really be a part of my community. I'm attempting to kind of see what's happening out there because I feel myself every day kind of becoming more and more of this crotchety old witch, kind of telling all the new witches to get off my lawn. And I don't necessarily want that to become who I am as a person. So I try and kind of, you know, mix in with the kids a little bit and kind of see what's going on. But the thing that I'm seeing most often is every other post in these groups is, hi, I've just started. Where do I begin? What books do I read? What spells should I do first? All these things.
Mm-hmm.
And no one is actually doing any research on their own. Mm-hmm. People are going, well, I'm a witch now. Now somebody make me into one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, first of all, you have that backwards. You don't call yourself something and then make yourself into it or have other people make you into it.
Uh-huh.
So there's this thing with modern culture where people are very much into having things given to them or handed over to them. And it's interesting what we're seeing in modern witch culture, because when it's not just handed over, people like to cry gatekeeping or things like that. But the truth is that when it comes to witchcraft, self-empowerment is pretty much the crux of why we're all here,
mm-hmm.
is to, you know, be able to take this power back into our hands. And that really starts from the beginning. You know, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter which book you should read first. It's the fact that you are getting books and reading them.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there are ones that are better to start with than others, but, you know, really kind of getting your hands dirty, really, you know, going for it is going to be important.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the term baby witch is concerned, I personally don't have any problem with it, but a lot of people right now are very angry about it. which it concerns me because when we're in a day and age in which we're really fighting things like systemic racism, mm-hmm. to cry that you are being oppressed by a term like baby witch is, it's maybe not the time mm-hmm. to do so. Mm-hmm. But also, it's very strange when I find people who self-identify as baby witch very comfortably and they're happy there. And then other people come in and try and tell them that they can't do that. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, if you want to identify as a baby witch, I have no problem with that. And on several occasions, I've had people kind of in the same Facebook groups that I need to get out of. I just need to leave them. But there's these sections where people will be like, well, it's not good to call yourself a baby witch because babies need other people to feed them and care for them and teach them things and all this. And they're posting this in between three different other posts that are new witches asking for people to do just that.
Yeah.
So I think there is a time and place for the term baby witch. And if it's something that people identify as, I say let them mm-hmm. identify as it. There are so many other fish to fry right now.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
The term baby witch, I don't spend too much time around.
Mm-hmm. I've seen you reference it in some of your article writing as novice witch or initiate. And I liked that a lot too. I thought that was, if I was to identify, you know, in the beginning, I didn't really feel the need. I wasn't, you know, yeah. we didn't have this kind of platform anymore, but I like the idea of novice or new witch. I mean, mm-hmm. it really is, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like the whole witch in training thing. It's yeah. very Kiki's yeah. delivery service.
Yes, yes, that was that. I love that. I love Kiki's delivery service.
I love that too. But you're so right. There's so many other things that we really need to be mm-hmm. focusing on. Professor Cross, you give so much to the community on your Instagram page. I personally have learned a lot from you, and I want to thank you for that. Your knowledge, your education, you know, your work. And I wanted to ask you, how do you come to this place in doing social justice work, sharing freely spell work around that? Like, is that something that you're doing because you feel that it's like your duty to serve the community in that way?
A little bit, yes. What I'm mostly trying to remedy when I talk about, you know, witchcraft and social justice working together is the fact that we as witches have such a bigger role in this to play than we are. Mm-hmm. Because as witches, people who have taken on this tradition and this lineage, we understand oppression better than most people. Not all people, but of course, oppression has always been there for witches, whether it was the witch trials, the witch hunts. No matter what country you come from, currently still today, mm-hmm. Witchcraft is punishable by death in several countries. So when oppression happens around us, I feel that witches, more than, you know, a lot of folks, have a duty to really step in, not only because we are familiar with oppression and fighting it, but also because we have something to offer. Mm-hmm. Because when we call ourselves witch, we are saying we have magic power. Mm-hmm. And in order to make that worthwhile, you know, why else do we have magic power other than to affect the world around us? You know, it's not just so that we can find a boyfriend and manifest all of our financial goals and things like that. No, we have to actually kind of get involved in the world around us. And the thing that most people don't understand is that we as witches are not here to be, you know, either on the side of good or on the side of evil or the dark or light or whatever. We belong in the middle as a referee. Mm-hmm. And so when the power gets so off balance, like we're seeing right now with systemic racism, all of these things, and then attempting to fight back with the Black Lives Matter movement, we then need to work ourselves in order to restore the balance and put things like white supremacy, systemic racism, and things like that back in their place. Hmm. Now, what we're seeing a lot of right now is people showing up at rally and protests and things like that, dressed in their witchy finest, yeah. and holding signs that say hex white supremacy. Mm-hmm. Now, great. I love that there is support there. Support is always good. However, when we do these things, we are pulling focus from the movement. And let's be honest, that is not as helpful as we could be. Mm-hmm. When we have magic power, we need to be utilizing it. So what I'm wondering is why we haven't just gone all Motherland Fort Salem on this situation here. Mm-hmm. Why are we dressing up like American Horror Story Coven when we should be there in combat boots and actually doing magic on the ground or grouping up in order to do magic to protect protesters or to do all kinds of things, you know, to help this movement happen? Because mm-hmm. right now, what we're seeing in the United States is an exorcism. Mm-hmm. We are, and as we are trying to cast out, you know, racism, systemic racism, all of these things, it's starting to kind of come to the surface. It is being unmasked. And, you know, we are kind of getting the names of the demons right now. And so it's getting so much worse before it gets better. Mm-hmm. But as people who understand this process, we really need to get involved, you know, magically and actually be active in the fight and not just kind of standing there looking great with a sign. You know, there's a difference. And I feel like we should really be getting our hands dirty in this and assisting, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement or other types of social justice movements, whether it's things with, you know, that are happening right now with First Nations people or what's happening at the border. Mm-hmm. We as witches have more to offer than an aesthetic and a sign.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I couldn't agree.
So really encouraging people to get out there and use the magic, use the spells, actually do the work is important right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. It's so true. So true. Yeah, there was a lot of protesting happening in the neighborhood that I have my shop. And I, every single day, every single night, I was sending out protective energy. And And I think you're so right. Like, you need to be there doing the work, those that can, you know.
Right.
On the front and then in the back, those that can't, those that get triggered terribly by it can mm-hmm. do. Everybody's got a role in it, absolutely. But everybody needs to be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Absolutely. And there's, you know, there's work from home that we can do. So
oh, yeah, that's
if,
what
you
I
know,
do.
Being there on the ground yeah. isn't for you. I understand, you know, especially right now, because I'm right out of the Portland area. So I'm real close to that. And I was living there for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So what's happening in Portland right now is we are having white supremacist groups show up mm-hmm. And they've had messages that they've been sharing with one another leaked before they arrive, or they're talking about bringing actual weapons and partaking in actual violence, if not murder, against protesters and people of color in the area. So I understand if you are not able to be on the ground or if it's not safe for you to be on the ground. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of also the beauty of magic, too, is you mm-hmm. don't have to be.
Right.
That's right.
And getting involved in these kind of local things that are really affecting our world is so much more important on the mm-hmm. witchcraft thing, because people are spending all this time, you know, hexing Trump or hexing these big, you know, figures in our world who are so much harder to reach with magic, mm-hmm. as well as the fact that their destiny and fate and whatnot is very much tied up with so many other people. So working magic on these people is absolutely useless. Mm-hmm. However, if we are able to attack more local things, affect smaller things with larger outcome, mm-hmm. then we're going to have actually, we'll be able to move the needle much more if we do that. And so I think it's important that we get involved in more of a local kind of protest level.
Mm-hmm. And by doing that, you have to educate yourself about your community, about the problems that are happening in your community. And, you know, so many of us are like, oh, I'm not political. I don't want to get involved. And I think that's total horseshit. You know, I think that we have to be involved yeah. mm-hmm. in what's happening around us. And if more people are involved in what's happening within our local systems, how much change
yeah.
could happen across the country?
Yeah. I mean, just, yes. you know, with my shop, you know, I'm changing the name.
She is changing the name.
I'm changing the name. Yeah. My shop is called Juju. It's not appropriate. It's the name of my cat. I named her 16 years ago. It's not appropriate for me as a white woman to have that. So I'm changing the name. It's little things like that. I'm a small business, but that change.
Yeah.
That's where you have to start on those small areas and say, hey, I'm recognizing fully this isn't right. Mm-hmm. No matter how many free services I offer, it's not right. Mm-hmm. And so I think starting small is really, it ripples.
Well, it's so important to do those things and make those changes. But while at the same time, understanding that while, you know, this is wrong and this is something that needs to be changed, that it doesn't mean that you're a terrible person or any of those things. It just simply means that we are recognizing, we are learning, and we are growing.
That's right.
So beautiful.
And hopefully each one of us that makes a change like this inspires someone else. Right. And that's how we heal. That's how it's affected. Yeah. And you know, absolutely. I could see that.
Oh, I want to hug you guys. Oh. Professor Cross, I would like to know.
I love that you're saying professor. I just love it.
It just feels right.
So Professor Cross was sharing with us before we started that you answer to Joshua or J. Allen Cross, or, and you said, what was it that you said, Professor Cross, if you're
nasty,
if you're naughty,
naughty.
Yeah, Professor Cross, if you're nasty, if you're feeling a little naughty, it helps me kind of weed out who's into what in the audience here. So
clearly, we're feeling naughty.
Uh-huh. Always
love it.
So, for those folks that are listening who have never done any sort of hexing work, protection work around this kind of concept around social justice, where could they start?
You should start with, of course, yourself and your immediate circle people. It's a lot harder if we're going to be getting involved with either hexing work or protection work as far as large groups or public figures or things like that. Those things get a little more tricky. And can require a little bit more of a nuanced flair. You need kind of a firm but a delicate approach to it.
Mm.
So when we're first starting out and we want to kind of get involved, it's best that we don't just dive into the middle of the fray, right? Because then it's very easy to suddenly be in way over our head. But, you know a friend who is going to the protest. Great. Do you have a sigil that you can draw on them before they go? Do you have a spell that you want to work on their behalf in order to try and protect them? Things like that. Very small things like that. Again, we need to kind of scale down kind of the view to smaller things, because those will have a greater impact. And especially when we're first starting, making sure that we don't go too big too soon is going to be important. So you're going to be more effective when we do it small.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a friend or a small group of friends that you want to provide magical protection for, that's going to be great. You can also make them things like charm bags or mojos or whatever it is, depending on your style of working, that they can take with them, as well as I use a lot of oils, like condition oils, in my work. So when I go to protests, I usually have like a protection one as well as a luck one on me as well, because you never know when a quick burst of luck will save you in those situations if things get really real. Working spells that are protection based or luck based or things like that are excellent ways to get started, for everybody, whether they're working in a protest capacity or a social justice capacity or just a regular everyday, I'm just starting witchcraft, working protection magic, working luck magic and things like that are excellent ways to kind of get yourself, accustomed to the process without having a lot of risk as far as things like rebound or, unintentional consequences and whatnot is concerned. So that is definitely where I would start.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, and it also it takes the pressure off of new folks too. It feels, I would say it would feel more comfortable for somebody just starting out doing this kind of work, doing a protection spell on, a group of people that they love,
Yeah. So it brings the personal power in it. It makes it close and intimate and stronger.
Well, and also understanding that when we do these things, even if they're small, it is enough, because I'm seeing a lot of baby witches right now who want to really just jump in there and be the impact that just changes everything. But at this point, we're not going to be able to be there. So understanding that even if we're only providing small magics to those around us, it is enough. It is participatory. As far as magic is concerned, it is enough. People should still be, supporting movement in other ways. Mm-hmm. But, not feeling that is just inadequate or not worth doing. It's absolutely worth doing. And I think more people should kind of feel comfortable jumping into that.
Mm-hmm. We have some listeners coming from a Christian background. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about, just because I also don't have any background doing this, is working with saints. How did you, how did you start doing that? I'm assuming it's from maybe some of your heritage. Can you share with us some of your experiences?
Yeah, absolutely. my journey into kind of a Christian realm with the witchcraft has taken quite a while. I was not always there. In fact, it's a decently recent, in the last several years, kind of path that I ended up on, because it is my ancestral magics. I come from, you know, an indigenous Mexican heritage. And so in my culture, it's very important that we work with things like saints and other figures that might be unusual to other magic practitioners. A lot of people are very confused by the work that I do with saints, because they feel like it's wrong, or they just have never seen it before. But it can be very powerful. And how I kind of ended up in it was, I knew that I wanted to join kind of the magic of my culture, you know, several years back. And I still wasn't sure how I felt about my Catholic upbringing, because I was raised Catholic. And when you're gay, that's always an interesting kind of way to go about it.
Oh, yeah.
So I had a lot of things to kind of sift through as far as, you know, my Catholic heritage. However, I did find one saint that I was like, actually, this is someone I can actually do business with and who I actually like. And that was Saint Martha. Saint Martha is amazing. So she is patron saint of service workers. That includes like waitresses, innkeepers, anyone who, you know, does customer service, or basically anyone who has a job as a boss at this point. Saint Martha is there because in the Bible, she ran an inn in Bethany where Jesus and his, you know, crew stayed at. And she's famous in the Bible for sassing Jesus because she was having none of his patriarchal bullshit. It's hilarious because so a lot of people really look down on Martha because of this. So
yeah.
Martha had a sister, Mary of Bethany. And Mary of Bethany would sit at Jesus's feet all day enraptured and just listening to everything he had to say.
Oh, with hard eyes.
While Martha was cooking and cleaning and changing beds and doing all these things so that they could be comfortable while they were there. And she'd come over and be like, girl, get up. I need your help. And Jesus would be like, but I'm Jesus. You should listen to what I have to say. And she's like, do you want food or not? And so there's all this kind of, there's even a book out called like How to Be a Mary in a Martha World. Like,
oh my God.
Oh,
I know.
Wow.
It's so bad. It's so bad. But she ended up actually kind of being a very important part in the Bible. Like she's one of the seven myrrh-bearing women. It depends on who you ask. Mary of Bethany and Mary Magdalene are often thought of to be the same person. So she's sometimes considered to be Mary Magdalene's sister, and Lazarus' sister as well. So she's kind of a big figure in the Bible that people like to kind of sweep under because they don't know what to do with her.
Yeah.
And more so than that, she's one of the only female dragon slayers in history. And it's her, and she took it alive, which is a big deal. Let me kind of go on a little.
What'd she do with the dragon?
This is incredible. So,
my eyeballs are so big right now.
It's like after the whole Jesus thing happens, you know, he rises, they all kind of go about their lives after he goes. And the story is that Mary and Martha, the two sisters, Jesus had taught them all kinds of spiritual things. Because if we really kind of read the Bible and look at this, Jesus
magic.
Was most definitely a witch.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
He taught them all this stuff. And so there's these stories of what happened after and when, like, where Mary and Martha go. And so there's one story where Martha comes across a town that is under siege by pirates. And so she says a prayer and the river rises and washes them all away. So she saves people from pirates. But kind of like the big story is that she comes across this town that is being totally terrorized by a dragon. And it comes and it steals their children or it steals their livestock and things like that. And so they're like, we need someone to help us. And she's like, I got you. So she goes down to the kind of cave where it lives and she finds the dragon there. And how it all kind of goes down is different from story to story. Some people say that, you know, she hit it with some holy water and then it was unable to breathe fire. And then she sang it hymns, which lulled it kind of into a trance. And then she tied it up with her girdle strings. And I think that is such kind of like a feminist symbol thing. She took off her girdle strings and tied up a dragon.
That is fucking great. I love this so much.
Right. So now it's tied up and it's tame. So she leads it back to the city to show everybody, look, it's fine now. Everything is safe. And when she takes it back into the city, the people freak out and kill it.
Oh my God. Oh.
That makes sense.
And there's so much symbolism involved with the story that I really love. Yeah. Some people argue that it's actually the seminal story for Beauty and the Beast, this kind of young maiden that kind of tames this misunderstood monster. And when she tries to show them that it's okay, they can't see past their own prejudices. Yeah. Murder it, kind of an idea.
So interesting.
Whether this is true or not, I am not sure.
That's cool.
But interesting things have happened with Martha. So one of the only actual shrines to her in the world is, I want to say, in like the Philippines or like Singapore or somewhere around there, because they were having trouble with a giant alligator that was coming and eating like livestock and kind of terrorizing them. A very similar idea.
Wow.
And so they prayed or something happened and they saw an apparition of Martha, and then the alligator was never seen again.
Oh, yeah.
So they have a shrine to her there.
I'm in love. I think she's just fantastic.
Right? She's really fabulous. So to this story here, a lot of people call on her to do things like tame their employer or their boss who is, you know, maybe a terrible human, or, you know, tame their boyfriend who is, you know, cheating on them or things like that. So they often ask her to come and help them kind of tame their insurmountable problems.
Not get rid of it. Just make it chill. Right?
Yeah, just chill. Just calm it down. Make it all.
Yeah, don't make them go away. Just chill. I love this. Yeah. So you started working with St. Martha when you were younger.
And she kind of took me by the hand and kind of led me into the rest of it. Because I didn't identify with the Mary of Bethany's who were just ready to just, you know, just be the perfect Christian. I wasn't there yet, but seeing people like Martha was very nice for me to be like, oh, okay, so I can still be kind of, you know, the way I am, but still be kind of a part of this world.
Yeah.
That, and getting in touch with the work of Nadia Bolz Weber, who is a Lutheran pastor who's like 6'1", covered in tattoos, like recovering drug addict. Her views on God and Christianity are actually really helpful for people who are trying to rejoin kind of that world, but also heal what was done to them through it. Because she's very much a not a perfect Christian, but kind of, you know, still learning to love God and be in that world is very helpful.
Is this person local to you, or is this somebody you read books?
No. She was in Colorado for a really long time. That's where her church was. Mm-hmm. But she does write books. Her first book, I believe, was called Pastrix, and it is my favorite because Pastrix is a term, kind of a derogatory term for female pastors. So she gets called a Pastrix a lot. And it was very healing for me to read her work and kind of understand this idea of what God might actually be like, as opposed to what we've been told God is like. So it's interesting. It takes a while to move in that direction, but that's kind of how I ended up sort of sliding into it.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So Joshua, I have a question. Did you have like any, what do I want to say, celestial connections to saints? Have you seen apparitions of saints as a child? Could you communicate? Was this something that you were tapping into as a youngster?
I did communicate with a lot of spirits. I'm not certain any of them were saints, at least when I was a child. I have had very kind of visceral connections with saints as an adult, because as a psychic medium, I'm a little more able to tune into that, because saints, in theory, are all just dead people on the other side. So as an adult, I have had several experiences with kind of face-to-face encounters with saints, but not so much as a child.
Okay. When were you like, okay, I'm psychic, I'm definitely tapping into this energy, I'm tapping into spirit energy? How did this begin to appear to you?
It really kind of came in with a bang. I was about 7 years old, and I remember having a series of migraines every night for about a week.
Sweet baby.
And I don't remember much of it, except for I do remember kind of laying on the floor in our living room and just sobbing. Oh. And my parents are trying to give me those like chewable grape Tylenol or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And they had no idea what to do. They're like, we can't help you try and take this. I don't know. Is it going away? Mm. And then one day they just stopped. And after they stopped, I began to have dreams that ended up coming true.
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly that kind of evolved from there into kind of feelings and sensing. And then when I was probably 10 or 11, maybe a little bit older than that, is when the actual dead people began to arrive, mm-hmm. which is hilarious because I was always like, oh, like, I'm so glad I'm not one of those psychics that sees dead people, because I don't know what I would even do with that. And then spirit's like, well, guess what?
Hello.
What's up? How you doing?
Up next for you, we have.
Right. So I always seem to find that as soon as I say, oh, I would never want to be that way with my spirituality, spirit's always like, well, guess what's next? So I kind of have to just go that direction with it.
Was that when you were seven, was that the only time you had your migraines?
No, I will still occasionally get them.
Yeah.
Every few years, I'll kind of get one. And then I do notice kind of a psychic uptick after that. Mm-hmm. So I call them my downloads.
Yeah.
Every so often, I'll just kind of just be hit by something and I just go lay down for a while. And they can get pretty bad. I tend to go blind with them for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But then once they're over, then I kind of feel there was a purpose for it. Mm-hmm. I'm never kind of sure what it is. It's kind of like when your phone gets an update a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are some bugs fixed or something new is there.
Yeah.
So you started to see dead folks, because I'm kind of interested in learning about some of the paranormal experiences that you've had.
Ooh, me too.
Some of the hauntings. And so for your services, are you somebody that is present for helping folks that might be experiencing attachments or anything like that? No, I don't want to say exorcisms, yes, but you know.
So to a certain extent I am. It's hard to do it via the internet because I have followers on Instagram from all over the world, from like, you know, I'll have people contact me in Sweden or whatever. And when I do this work, especially when it comes to haunted homes and attachments and things like that, I really, really like to be able to be there in person.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I feel the bulk of the work can be done. And especially when I'm dealing with a person who has an attachment, being able to actually put hands on them, to actually kind of feel for myself what I think is going on there, is important to me in this work. So it is a lot more difficult to do it via a distance. However, due to COVID and everything that's happening right now, I have had to kind of push the envelope on what I previously thought was possible. And so I have had some luck resolving hauntings or attachments or curses from a distance, which has been nice to sort of see. I've needed a little bit of help with it. I've been working with some spirits on it. It is something that can be done from a distance, but I do prefer whenever possible to be able to go there myself. I'm trying not to make it so much of a thing to do it from a distance, because I just simply have so many people that are at a distance that would be all I would be doing, when I really feel like my personal mission is to actually be able to go to people's homes and help them.
Mm-hmm.
I am working on trying to teach more people so that they can do it themselves. I've felt for a while now that it's very hard to find people who know how to actually work with a haunting or resolve a haunting, especially within the paranormal investigation community. That was something I wasn't expecting. The number of them who are like, yeah, we have no idea how to help you, but we'd love to take photos.
Yeah.
That's not something that I'm really into. So I'm attempting to get the education out there so that I don't have to do too much of the distance work. But for now, I am kind of working on that.
We have a lot of listeners that think that they're hexed or curious about being hexed and or cursed or an attachment or possession of some kind. And, you know, we've addressed it a lot of times, and you really tend to be pretty debilitated if you are cursed or hexed or have an attachment. What's been your experience with that?
I do feel a lot of the times it is bigger than people are expecting when it comes to being hacksters. I get several people, you know, fairly frequently that are like, oh, well, you know, the other day I got in a fight with my boyfriend, it must be hacks. And I'm like, not so much.
Yeah. I got a flat tire on the way to work.
Exactly. But what's interesting, something that I am seeing, though, is back in the day, you know, when I was first learning all of this stuff, the party line was, you will probably never be cursed in your life because the people who have the knowledge to curse you will be so spiritually evolved that they won't use it.
I'm like, I love that. Allison's like, that's not true.
Like, it's a wonderful idea. And I love growing up in that atmosphere.
Yeah.
But the truth is that the landscape of witchcraft has changed dramatically.
Oh, yeah.
Because back in the day, you had to either be taught how to curse by someone who was mentoring you and teaching you and kind of helping you with your spiritual evolution. Now, they're just sharing it willy-nilly on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, here's how to, you know, take away your ex-boyfriend's erection. And here's how to get rid of Becky in your office. And so there's been a massive uptick in people that I feel who actually have been cursed. Or, you know, this idea that, you know, curses are very rare, actually no longer stands up.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, when we look at this mentality that curses never happen, that's, I hate to kind of say it, a very white cultural thing.
Yeah.
Because when we come to, like, my culture in Mexican magic, spiritual warfare is not only a thing, but it's prevalent.
Mm.
You speak to people who are in La Cultura and they will tell you, like, oh, yeah, no, my ex-boyfriend's aunt is a bruja, and after I broke up with him, my car flipped four times. Like, really powerful magic that is getting thrown around. So, depending on what culture you're from, and of course, it's not all white cultures, because, like, Italian magic is very much the same. Italian and Mexican folk magic are very similar.
Yeah.
So, this idea that someone wouldn't actually come after you magically for, you know, even stuff that's not super a big deal, it doesn't really hold up in a lot of these places.
Mm-hmm.
When we come from, like, a Wiccan background, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, but in these other places, not so much. So I do find that there has been a big uptick in cursing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people come to me and are like, how do I know if I'm cursed? I like to go through, like, the checklist, you know. First, all your house plants will die. And then maybe even some of your pets will die as well. You'll have unexplained illness or bad luck that is out of the ordinary. And I'm not just talking like, oh, you stubbed your toe and you missed your bus. I'm talking like, you stubbed your toe, you missed your bus, your dog died, you got fired, all of your friends decided that they don't believe you anymore. Like, all these things happening within, like, several days of one another. And curses will tend to escalate as well. So it's very important to kind of know the signs and also be very aware of your dreams around it, because those will often be the first indicator that something is wrong. And they'll often kind of tell you, too, where it's coming from. I have in dreams been given people's Instagram name for who's responsible for it.
Dude.
So it's being able to pay attention to these things.
Oh, my God.
It's really important.
Yeah. Wow, that's incredible. I wonder, since Mars has been in retrograde, if more people are cursing each other. Because everybody's pissed off, man. Boy. I mean, and I know, you know, the world is inflammatory right now for many reasons, rightfully so. But, you know, Mars in retrogrades tends to push it along a little bit. So, just a side note.
Yeah.
You know,
just a wondering.
That too.
There's been a lot of sassy folks in those comments lately.
Oh, yeah.
Real sassy.
Really sassy.
So how, you know, I mean, I think, I know as a witch, like, how I can work to protect myself and that kind of thing. What do you typically recommend if it's something that, I mean, I'm sure that there's levels of, like, wow, this is really intense, or this one's, you know, you can do a little bit of work around it to release it. What do you typically find works?
It really depends on kind of where the epicenter of the activity is, because is it you specifically that has been cursed, or is it your family? Is it your home? Is it, you know, the land that you're on? Kind of depends on what exactly has been most affected by the curse. And when it comes to undoing these things, there's no such thing as going overboard with attempting to get a hex off yourself or to protect yourself. There's no such thing as kind of doing too much. Really, it couldn't hurt, might help to throw the kitchen sink at it. So I highly recommend that people, you know, if they're like, I don't know if I should do this too, might as well throw it on. It's not going to hurt you. But if it's with a person and they feel like they personally have been affected by something, then I think a great way to go about it is either you need to see a professional, someone like a curandero or a curandera, or, you know, someone else who is able to take the hex off of you or to pluck it out of you, depending on how it's been given, to, you know, administer a spiritual bath to yourself. And when I say that, a lot of people are going to mishear me and say, go take a bubble bath with some salt in it. And no, that is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about get a bucket, get you some herbs. It should be cold. So I tell people to really kind of go for the real traditional spiritual bath. You're going to want to work with plants like agrimony. Agrimony is so good at taking off and undoing like all kinds of hexes and curses and things. You know, these types of plants, you know, to really get into it. And so I always mix them up in a bucket. I always make mine cold because I find that cold water energy is so very cutting and cleansing when it comes to kind of really just slicing through these things. I also like to work with a lot of limes. I find limes to be extremely cleansing for that same purpose because they're very cutting. They slice right through it. So working with things like limes and agrimony and whatnot is going to be really important.
Holy shit.
So seasonally, my friend, at this time of year, what's like some of your favorite practices to start incorporating and honoring the changes that are coming?
I love to kind of do some old timey sort of traditional things. You know, I of course love a good pumpkin. A jack-o'-lantern is just wonderful. I love it.
Do you do like a traditional carving, or like do you put Nicolas Cage on a pumpkin? Like what's your jam?
I'm very low maintenance with my pumpkin.
Me too.
I am a traditional, I like triangle eyes
and
a zigzaggy mouth, and I call it a day. That's I think the perfect one for me.
I agree.
I also love to make corn husk dolls around this time of year. And I do incorporate them into magic. I don't use a lot of like wax figures or like, you know, puppets that are stuffed and sewn or things like that. I use mainly corn husk dolls for that work. So I make them a lot this time of year.
So no pumpkin spice.
Do you like the pumpkin spice?
Everything pumpkin spice.
Oh, yeah.
I am the most basic fall person ever. I'm like in my Uggs with my like 7-layer wraparound scarf and my pumpkin spice latte. I get fully cozy.
I love it.
In the fall.
We have these next door neighbors. And like the way our property is laid out, our house is separated by like our yard, and then it's the next door neighbors. And Donna and I like to, Donna's my wife, and so we sit outside and we drink our morning tea and stuff, and we can smell the scented fall, autumn, crispy candles.
You can smell
from
it
from their house.
That's a potent candle
in our yard.
Wow. Are we neighbors? Because that might be my house.
I know.
Those
I love it.
Good old like Hallmark candles that are super potent.
Oh, I'm sure like, it's Yankee girl. Crispies. Like it's Yankee all day long. Yeah. You know.
Yes. They used to have Yankee Candle. Used to have a witch's brew that my sister and I were obsessed with.
What's it smell like?
Like patchouli. To me, like I don't know if this will like, but like there was an 80s. Scratch and sniff sticker that my sister used to have that was a witch.
Oh.
And I scratched it so hard to smell it because I was so obsessed with it. And that's what this candle smells like. So it's like kind of patchouli, but then sort of like mineral spirits and a little bit of turpentine. And I don't know. It's just kind of this like thick. Oh God, it's so good. And maybe just a little bit of like cardamom or cinnamon spice. I don't know. It's no longer made.
Oh, that's a shame.
Sadly, but
I need it.
I need it too.
You would love it. Oh my God, you would love it.
Sounds amazing. What is the worst paranormal haunting experience you've encountered?
There's kind of like there's the worst, and then there's kind of the most shocking.
I like shocking too.
So the one that I feel makes for kind of the best storytelling. There was a house in Lower Washington that we got called to. And in this house were a bunch of people who lived together. I believe there were six of them, and they were all family members, but they weren't siblings. They were like cousins, and they decided to all kind of live in this big house together. It was very fancy. It was in a housing development, and a lot of people will be really surprised at the number of haunted homes I get called to that are in new construction, mm-hmm. like these beautiful housing developments that will be haunted. But we got called to it, and the activity they were reporting was just off the charts. The oldest male in the home was an Iraq war veteran with severe PTSD. Aww. However, on top of that, they also had an entity in the home that in the middle of the night, they would hear screeching that they refer to as like a howler monkey. Oh, and it sounded like it was coming from the roof.
From the roof?
From the roof.
Oh my God.
And they were never really able to figure out what it was, but they said it was loud enough to wake them all up.
Oh my
God. All of them were experiencing nightmares, and all of them were experiencing doppelgangers, which is something that will occasionally happen with poltergeist activity, in which they, we'll call one of the girls like Susie and one of the boys Tom. So like Tom would be in the kitchen and Susie would come in and they would have a conversation about like, oh, like what they're going to do for dinner or whatever. They talk for a bit and then Susie would go upstairs. The moment Susie would go upstairs, Susie would come through the front door carrying groceries. And Tom would be like, what are you doing? Like, we were just talking a second ago. Where did you get those? And she'd be like, I've been at the store this entire time.
Creepy.
Oh, boy.
And so they go and look upstairs, and the Susie who just went upstairs is gone.
Oh, no.
And each member had seen at least or had an interaction with one of these doppelgangers at one point or another.
Oh, my God.
So this entity was kind of coming out into plain sight to see how much, you know, wiggle room it could have as far as interacting with that.
Uh-huh. Oh, my God.
Now, one thing that they had on camera was the fact that the oldest male tended to have nighttime disturbances. Now, that's normal with, you know, PTSD, to have things that flashbacks or whatnot. But this was definitely different because they had on film that so one part of the house was a split level. So it was kind of like an open second story with a balcony.
Mm-hmm.
And they had it on film that he would jump from the second story balcony down to the first floor and then run on all fours into the kitchen.
Oh my God.
And they all said that they didn't know how to describe it, but it almost seemed like for just a moment that his forearms were elongated to compensate for the all fours running.
Oh my God.
He would go into the kitchen where he would open the fridge and begin to eat raw hamburger by the hand.
Stop it right now.
No, seriously. And this had happened several times. And in the morning, they would try and tell him and be like, bro, this thing happened. And he'd be like, no, because he was a major skeptic, as kind of the oldest male in these situations tends to be. Then they decided to record it. And while he's eating this hamburger by the handful, he looks up and sees that they're recording. And he starts yelling, he can't see this. He can't see this, and trying to take it from him.
Oh my gosh.
So it wasn't until they showed it to him that he realized kind of what was happening.
Oh my God.
My goodness gracious.
So I run into some crazy stuff.
So what did you do?
No, yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, I guess I would assume. I mean, was it resolved? Were you guys able to help them out?
It was as resolved as we were able to do because several things were happening there. Yeah. Where number one, I don't mean to go on too much of a tangent here on paranormal stuff, but so when you have poltergeist activity, people often think that poltergeist activity is caused by a spirit or an entity because, you know, poltergeist translates from the German to noisy ghost. Mm-hmm. So people are often mistaken thinking that like, oh, there's a spirit entity and it is a poltergeist.
Mm-hmm.
What a poltergeist activity actually is it's caused by the living. Normally, it will revolve around teenage girls because they have a lot of not only physical, like chemical energy from being in puberty, but also intense amounts of emotional energy. And this huge, these big blasts of energy have to go somewhere. And that normally kind of ends up being your poltergeist. You will see things like objects flying across the room. It's unintentional PK activity or psychokinesis. Now, what will also happen is in cases of dysfunctional families who fight constantly or have other mental or psychological or even psychic disturbances within the home will create their own haunting. Now, sitting on the couch across from this family, I would watch them go from 0 to 100, from bickering to like full on, like a Jerry Springer style fighting. And I'm like, oh, it's no wonder you're having poltergeist activity in your home because you guys are creating it with just these massive amounts of energy that you're throwing around. So that's kind of one thing on it. But also poltergeists tend to be accompanied by a simultaneous haunting, because other entities really like that energy that gets thrown around, which makes poltergeist kind of hard to pinpoint, because like a good portion of it will seem like classic poltergeist activity, but then there will be like another kind of group of activity that seems like it's spirit based, because it often is. So not only did they have their family dysfunction, which was creating a large amount of chaos and activity in their house just based on their family dynamic, but then they also had an entity in there as well. And then when you have people who are psychologically vulnerable, people who have been through, let's say, war, terrible, terrible war, and he wasn't just like stationed somewhere for a few months and then let out. He was like in combat, seeing some terrifying things. I had to speak with him for a while about kind of what he had been through. And he had really, really been through it over there. So these things all kind of have to be addressed at once. So I'm able to address things like, well, you know, I can remove the spirit entity from your home. But as far as you guys being able to function as a family that isn't going to cause activity and also receive the psychological help that you need in order to work this out, a lot of it tends to kind of weigh on the family, because that's not things that I can do. I'm not, you know, a trauma counselor or anything like that that's able to help. So you can resolve it to a point.
I guess with everything, it's about self-responsibility. You know, like you guys went in there, you were able to identify the issue, but really it came down to them and like how they're going to handle it.
For sure. And to be honest, it's sometimes people just simply want to be haunted. I had another case in Lower Washington, a different area, where a man was haunted by what he referred to as his demon. He would call it my demon. And he called us to the house to get rid of it, but also wouldn't stop talking about it and showing us pictures of it and all this stuff. And he seemed really almost kind of proud of it. And that was a weird case anyway. But after we got rid of it, we were all leaving and thinking like, nah, he's just going to bring it back in because he likes it too much. He thinks it's super cool. And then years later, I'm at an event, a paranormal kind of convention event, and I'm standing in line and I hear this guy talking about his demon, and he starts naming people in my paranormal team who went with me to help it, to help fix it. And I turn around and it's this guy. And he's like, no, it's back. Look, I have pictures. And he's showing me pictures. And I'm like, you like it too much for it to stay away. You know, you're creating these agreements and giving it, you're allowing it to be in your space and giving it all this permission to be there. So I can do exorcism until I'm blue in the face, but if people aren't going to follow through with their homework, then it tends to kind of be all for nothing.
Thank you so much for that.
Oh yeah, that was I didn't see that coming.
Me neither.
So if it's like in somebody's like realm of expectation for there to be a spirit, let's say like at the bottom of the basement steps, is it going to be most likely that it shows up there because it's in like the heart of the person who lives there to like invite it almost?
Sort of. So it depends on kind of what our parameters for spirit is concerned. If we're talking about like a ghost, like a human earthbound spirit, you know, someone who has died, not so much. But when we go into things like inhuman spirits, these negative entities, what a lot of, you know, paranormal investigation shows called demons, then we start working with this idea of making agreements with them. And so we make agreements with these entities way easier than we think that we do. So something like, there's going to be something at the bottom of the stairs could be taken as an agreement that it is allowed to be there or appear there. And agreements tend to be a lot more complicated than that, but that is kind of an idea. So with your question, yes, to some extent, if that makes sense at all.
I think it makes sense.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Should we talk about agreements?
Yeah, I was going to say that kind of goes into like you're being impeccable with your word and being careful how you phrase things. So yes, please go into that.
For sure. Well, I mean, a lot of the times hauntings start, especially big hauntings, will start very small. It's very, very uncommon for a home to be not haunted one day and then the next day have people being thrown across the room or being scratched or, you know, growling coming from places, things like that. It doesn't just happen overnight. And if it does, it means that somebody sent it to you, but that's a different story. Mm-hmm. But it's very rare to have that happen. So they always start off small with like a knocking. And then eventually you get curious and you knock back. And then you've created an agreement that we can establish rapport. And then you start doing things like, can you knock twice? And then it knocks twice. You've given it permission that it can interact with you. And then it kind of moves on from there. And then so another example would be, you know, in the paranormal community, it's extremely common for people to hear a story about, some dangerous object like a knife or something was thrown across the room at a person and just barely missed them. Mm-hmm. But you never hear stories about something like a knife being thrown across the room and killing someone because they don't have permission. But if they can get really close to you but not hurt you, then you start going, oh my God, this thing can hurt me. And you have formed an agreement with it. So this happens a lot where this activity, this smaller activity, is all based around attempting to get agreements from you. Now, it kind of works the a similar way in reverse, where beings of light, things like, I hear a lot of times where people will be like, this, you know, entity or this evil thing showed up. Why didn't Saint Michael protect me? Or why didn't my ancestors protect me? And I'm like, did you give them permission to? And because, again, they also need agreements on the other side, because these inhuman entities, these things like angels or, you know, negative entities or whatever it is, need our agreements to work on. Another podcast that is, I believe it was the Big Seance podcast. Oh, gosh, I want to say like their second episode was with a woman named Marilyn Painter, who goes into great depth on the on agreements and how they work. And that was very helpful for me to kind of find vocabulary for something I was already seeing in the work that I was doing. And that's also kind of why Ouija boards tend to be a bit of an issue. It's not the board itself. There's nothing wrong with the board. But people go, is there anything here that wants to make contact with us? That's a huge agreement.
A big time.
And then, and then some people believe too that like, some people believe that the spirit that we're interacting with moves the pointer, and other people think that the spirit influences us to move the pointer. And depending on what your belief is surrounding that, you might also be agreeing to let it perform a partial possession on you. So it's not necessarily the Ouija board that's the problem. It's the fact that you make a lot of agreements very rapidly and blindly with whatever is around
Most
you.
Most importantly, blindly. Because the Ouija board is a game.
Well, and that's something that we talked about with Alicia in another episode too. You can only get, you can only be cursed or hexed or possessed or attached if you give something agreement to it. If you exist in a constant state of protection, either employing your team, your ancestors, you know, Archangel Michael, Saint Michael, to stand guard for you, right? Then, you know, I know that there are these things, these protections, they can leak and that can happen. And we're human and make mistakes and sometimes don't hold it as strongly as we can. But do you agree with that? That it's like, if you create a strong protection practice, even going, I'm sure you have a very strong protection practice just by the work that you're doing. You have to go into a place protected. Do you agree?
Yes. Yeah. Protection is, yes, it's very important when you do it that way. It's interesting because in the work I do, I find a lot of people, especially in kind of the older crowd a little bit, kind of where they live through that very kind of new age situation that happened in kind of like the late 80s, early 90s era, they'll be of the impression that, oh, well, I just vibrate at a higher frequency and therefore the demons can't get me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's great, but do you want to test that? Like that, I agree with you to some extent on that, that is helpful in protection, but just to kind of be like, I'm simply above like the entities, that mentality is helpful, but it's not something that I want to rely on.
Mm-hmm.
So I am very much into active protection, whether it's, you know, your psychic defense with your visualizations or protection spells, protection charms that, you know, you carry with you. I like to layer this because it's not something that you really want to test, especially in the field. And if I'm in someone's home, if suddenly I get attacked by something, not only am I suddenly at risk, but also I have lost the faith of the people who have brought me in to help them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So making sure that I am protected and safe is going to help me better assist them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but, you know, at the same time, simply being not afraid of these entities is a large part of the protection, but I want more than that.
Mm-hmm. Frankie from Utah, I have a question for you. I am starting ancestor work, but am struggling. On my mother's side, we have very clear roots to Ireland. My father's side is a bit more complicated. We can trace back my father's paternal side to Italy, as my grandfather was born there. However, my paternal grandmother was half Native American and half Italian. Her mother was a Cherokee woman, but died in childbirth. Her sisters and her were raised in the Italian-American culture, and no one in our family identifies with this culture present in our bloodline. As a very much white young woman who has never been exposed to this native culture and who doesn't identify with it, how do I go about my work without appropriating a culture I don't feel entitled to? Thank you so much again for the work that you do.
Interesting.
I know.
Yeah. It's a great question.
Seriously, I say this every single time, but the people listening are so bright and curious and just...
And they care.
They do. They really care. Deeply. They want to create a relationship that's genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you've written to this a little bit too, Joshua, and some of the articles out there too. So I'm anxious to see, you know, what you have to, because I've seen you talk about it as misappropriation, not always cultural appropriation. So what do you think in this position?
Yeah. So as far as, you know, like the cultural appropriation or misappropriation more accurately goes, I always like to ask myself three questions. And I encourage people to ask themselves this, because people seem to be very confused about what counts as cultural appropriation and what doesn't. And a lot of times people mistakenly think that any contact with another culture is bad. I've had people who are like, oh, I don't drink margaritas anymore because it's cultural appropriation. And I'm like, that's not how this works at all. we will always kind of have a fluidity of kind of, you know, exchanging cultures and, you know, learning from each other and, you know, kind of having this exchange. But if we're concerned, I ask myself three questions. The first question is, does it make you money? And so if there's a difference between like, oh, my child is having nightmares, so I've either made a dream catcher or I have purchased one from a native individual, that I feel like you're within bounds. If you then open up an Etsy selling dream catchers that you've made, then we're getting into territory that we shouldn't be in. So kind of, you know, does it make you money? That's going to be important. The second thing is does it take up space? You know, can you venerate your Native American ancestors? Absolutely. Does that mean that you need to take up a spot in the sweat lodge? Probably not. So there's kind of this fine line there as far as taking up space is concerned. The third question is kind of the most difficult, is does it erase culture? And this is a hard one because a lot of times people don't realize how this comes about. One of the most common ways I'm seeing it done these days is people get very interested in things like African traditional religion, or what we call ATRs, things like Santeria. And so they'll go, oh, I've decided that I am going to be working with Oshun now. Mm-hmm. I've decided that Oshun is my guardian spirit or my spirit guide or something of that, you know, effect. And so then they'll just start working with Oshun and completely jump over years and years and years of tradition that stand in between, you know, point A to working with Oshun. And when kind of approached about that, they'll be like, oh, well, it was too hard. There was no one around me who, you know, could be my mentor or do the divinations that were necessary. And like, I didn't want to do a year in white. So I just kind of bent the rules to make it easier. And then that ends up spreading from one person to the other and erasing mm-hmm. the need for all of the culture, all of the spirituality kind of that comes with Santeria and some of these other African traditions. So, you know, making sure that it doesn't do any of these things. So if you answer no to all three of those questions, then I don't think you're in too much danger as far as cultural appropriation is concerned. And when it comes to ancestor veneration, I think it's important to embrace mm-hmm. these areas. Yeah. That doesn't mean that you have to like go out and join the drumming circle, but very much acknowledge that that is a part of you. Mm-hmm. Because people, especially nowadays, are really into picking and choosing, you know, what section of the ancestors that they're working with, because, you know, they want to work with the ones that were, you know, Native Americans, or they want to work with the ones that were Black or whatever, but their white ancestors or their colonizer ancestors, mm-hmm. things like that, they really shy away from. But these are people who made us. Mm-hmm. And so integrating kind of these people in whatever way you feel is most important is something that we need to do, just because we can't simply pretend that they don't exist. And so I think it's very important for this person to, you know, maybe get to know a little bit about their Cherokee ancestry and kind of, you know, what their spiritual beliefs were and stuff. It doesn't mean that they have to necessarily feel that they have to participate in it, especially if they're uncomfortable with it. I don't want them to feel like they have to.
Right.
But just simply being aware of it, being educated about it, and just simply knowing that that is something that they carry within themselves, just that simple knowing about it, I think is going to be very helpful for their ancestor veneration.
I mean, we go back to the ancestor altar too, but like having some representation of, you know, that as a bloodline or mm-hmm. you know, even a photograph of some kind, because I think it's still important to be, it's part of who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, just so absolutely. To honor it that way, like just honor it, then honor it privately in your home on your altar.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know,
absolutely. That doesn't take up space, doesn't make you mm-hmm. money, doesn't erase culture. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And something else that came to mind is by naming her and by venerating her, honoring her, you are working on healing your colonizer bloodline mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. And it seems like this, this listener is really, you know, feeling tender around these sorts of subjects. And I really think that's fantastic, Frankie. And, yeah. And so, you know, by simply doing your research, doing research about the Cherokee culture is not appropriating.
Cultural appreciation.
That's appreciation. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Ooh, so nice.
I know it.
Mm. Okay. Jacqueline B. from New Jersey says, "Hi, Hags. Thank you so much for all that you do for this community. I've only been listening to your podcast for a short time, but you've already helped me so much. I first started dabbling in spirituality a little less than a year ago, and I am interested in witchcraft. Through oracle card readings, meditation, and signs, I know for sure that the goddess Lakshmi is present with me and is one of my guides.
What is the difference between working with a spirit guide and working with a deity? When working with Lakshmi as a spirit guide, how can I honor her so she knows how much I appreciate her presence? I have heard stories from people where deities get, quote, mad at them for not honoring them correctly, which makes me nervous. I don't want to work with this energy incorrectly. Thank you so much. Lakshmi is an Indian mm-hmm. goddess, a Hindu goddess, right? Mm-hmm. Professor Cross, how do you feel about people working with a spirit guide versus a deity?
Well, they tend to be two very different things. Mm-hmm. And this is something that we're seeing a lot happening very recently. This started happening that suddenly mm-hmm. these gods from other cultures are now people's spirit guides. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I'm not entirely certain how I feel about it.
Yeah.
Because yeah. that's not their function.
No,
it's that not. That is not what they're here to do. Guides and deities are very different.
Yeah.
And to that matter, when we're going to be honoring certain things like gods and whatnot, it's important that we follow the ways that they want to be honored as they've expressed to the people who have been honoring them. Mm-hmm. So this is a little bit like what I'm seeing, kind of what I was talking about with African traditional religions. People, you know, when we talk about Santeria or finding out who your head spirit is, there is a lot involved in that. There is divinations involved that have to be done a certain way. There are ceremonies and there's rituals and there's years that happen before we find out that so-and-so is your head spirit, and then you get kind of indoctrinated into their branch of it. But people don't do that these days. They do things like, I got out my oracle cards and
right.
they told me this thing, which is not how this
yeah.
works. And I don't yeah. want to call this person out so much, but that's not how this works. And it can be dangerous mm-hmm. to approach certain deities, certain spirits this way. Because there's a certain amount of respect that needs to be given to them. If they have said, you know, I want people to honor me this way, to completely jump over that and then say, oh, well, now this spirit works for me because my oracle cards that didn't exist until, I don't know, 20 years ago mm-hmm. told me. Mm-hmm. We need to be very careful in doing that. What I would recommend is doing a lot of work surrounding, learning about that culture, again, kind of like what we were talking about last time, mm-hmm. learning about how do they work with and how do they honor Lakshmi in the Indian culture. And then, find out, is this common for mm-hmm. Lakshmi to reach out to people and try and guide them, mm-hmm. whether or not that means that they are your spirit guide or a deity who is attempting to kind of point a way for you is going to be different things. But kind of taking the time to educate yourself about, you know, the Hindu religion,
yeah.
how do you approach Lakshmi? How do you honor their spirit and really tell their story in a way that is correct? Mm-hmm. Because if we kind of leap over an entire culture, then we're not honoring them to the fullest extent that we could.
Yeah.
So really finding that education and honoring them in the way that their culture does is going to be important.
This doesn't always happen, but I'm just kind of staring off into space here. And I was getting an intuitive pull that Lakshmi isn't necessarily her guide, but her guide was a devotee, like truly dedicated life to honoring this goddess. So I wonder if that can get misinterpreted in some of the meditation. Like, is it that I'm keep seeing this? Is it this, or is my guide sharing that this is somebody mm-hmm. that I've honored?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
I think that, that's really cool, Leslie.
Thanks.
Yeah.
The tree told me outside.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, the elm. Oh, how beautiful. I think that this kind of comes from the energy of us wanting the answer so quickly.
Mm, yes.
And, you know, I want to advise Jacqueline to just take your time. Take your time to get to know Lakshmi as intimately as possible, just like, you know, Professor Cross said.
Yeah.
And, you know, not necessarily doing any ritual work, not necessarily doing any meditation, not anything like that. Just get to know her stories. Research the artwork that was created about her. Research her, you know, her mythology. She's got so many stories mm-hmm. in the Hindu texts. you know, and there's a lot of information that you can get from that. And then once you feel saturated, really and truly decide if she's the right guide for you.
Yeah, I do tread lightly with this kind of stuff.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
I think that you're correct in that, especially talking about, you know, Lakshmi maybe wanting this person to be a devotee, because that does happen on occasion cross-culturally, where, you know, different deities will be like, this is a person who's meant to be in my pod. The problem that we're facing a lot these days, though, is that people don't know what that looks like when it happens. And so this person, what they're describing, you know, kind of like, you know, beyond the oracle cards, but also receiving signs. And I think Dane also mentioned dreams as well. Sometimes when a spirit wants you to be a devotee, it will reach out and very much make itself known to you, which makes it all the much more important to kind of learn about it and how to honor it and work with it. The trouble that we have in modern witchcraft a lot is that people mistake being drawn to something as an open invite to work with it. So I get a lot of people in my DMs and things like that who are like, oh, well, I started working with Santa Muerte. And I'm like, okay, why? And they're like, well, I'm very drawn to her. And I'm like, well, I'm drawn to Jason Momoa. He doesn't want me.
Oh, yeah, he's beautiful, isn't he?
Like, I'm like, that doesn't mean that he wants me anywhere near him just because I'm into it.
So I'm kind sure of he's really nice.
Of being like,
oh, man.
You
truly.
Know,
like
there's a level.
Well, yeah,
if you like it the way that you like a really cool leather jacket, then it's not what you're looking for. Right? If the leather jacket keeps showing up in your house, then okay, fine.
Yeah.
Oh, leather jackets just hanging out, just being like, yo, what's up?
Hey. Right.
It's true, though. Yeah, it's true. I totally agree with you. Like, there have been so many like times that I've felt like, you know, that sort of connection, and I don't rush to it.
Anyway.
Well, yeah. Okay. All right. Okay.
Okay. All right.
All right. Okay. Okay. We've got Anne from Ohio. Anne from Ohio. Breaking the ice here. Okay. I'll start with infinite thank yous for the high quality content. Thank you, Anne. You beautiful people have opened many doors in my mind, and I do not take your hard work and commitment to this podcast lightly. I'll start by setting a brief scene for my question. I grew up in a family that was deeply involved in a Christian ministry that had many culty undertones. So when I realized the people I was really crushing on were girls, I could not even say I and gay in the same sentence out of fear that it would make it true. I ended up in conversion therapy for just over 2 years. Fast forward through many empowering experiences and therapy sessions over the years, I am now in a committed relationship with the woman of my dreams, but I find that I'm still carrying around a deep-seated belief that I am evil. It's not necessarily tied to my sexuality anymore, but more all-encompassing, like I'm unable to have good intentions and that I am undeserving of anything healthy and good. So long story short, I know and feel so very ready to do some shadow work, as I have been carrying around this negative, heavy energy for as long as I can remember. I'm new to magic and would love to know your thoughts on my situation. Big and small rituals, everyday practices, plant allies, shoot away. Thank you.
Rose comes up for me in this particular situation. Rose magic to me is very compassionate and very healing when it comes to any sort of work around sexuality and around worthiness. Rose has been seen as a sacred symbol, you know, forever in every single faith system. And Rose happens to be, you know, a very deep protector as well, especially for the heart space. Oh man, a long time ago, I don't even know what episode it was at this point, I had shared my Rose meditation. And just to simply go through this, this is something that you can do to, it's not necessarily, you know, tied to exercising how you feel about yourself, but more around protecting yourself and honoring your sacredness. And what this looks like is, you know, seeing a beautiful rose in front of you, seeing it as perfect as it possibly can be to you, whatever that perfection is. And then envisioning that rose kind of sprouting out and encircling you with its thorny vines, and having those vines flower and bloom and then begin slowly to circle clockwise around you. And this is something that you can do on a daily basis to work on healing yourself, work on, you know, bolstering your self-worth, your self-love, and then also protecting yourself all at the same time. That's very quick, but that's what I was thinking about.
Rose.
Mm-hmm. Rose.
I love that.
Mm. Yeah, we've even done like a really beautiful, like in the same sort of, because it does feel like Anne is really seeking some, you know, fulfilling the self, mm-hmm. finding groundedness,
filling the
and
cup.
Worthiness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And same sort of like physical. And so you can do like a whole, you could do the visual rose and you could do the physical rose.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Where you almost like, you can utilize moon water in this, mm-hmm. and you dab the rose into the water and you sort of anoint. I do like my crown, then my third eye, and then sort of right down the chakra line, and then really rest it at the heart space and hold it. There's something so beautiful about the gentleness of the petal, how it touches your skin, that almost immediately feels as if you're being held by a loved one.
Oh, lovely.
It's beautiful. Oh. Yeah, so that's Rose, so she is, and I'll also like kind of envision same like with a rose blossoming at my heart center, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and then fill, and then actually to then like the color of the rose going all the way like through my arteries and veins, mm-hmm. and through my nervous system and filling up in that sort of beautiful rose gold sort of light. Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about like so much about, we're always talking about removing and, you know, yeah. doing the shadow work, but also how important it is then to fill in
you
the
have
space.
To fill it. That's right. That's mm-hmm. right.
First of all, I want to say this first, and I'm so sorry that this happened to you, because it's such a traumatic event, and I can't even begin to fathom what going through conversion therapy is like. And I also want to applaud you mm-hmm. on going to therapy and doing the work, because so many people these days have mixed up magic and therapy. Mm-hmm. And instead of being like, oh, instead of going to therapy, people are like, what color candle do I need to heal my trauma? Mm-hmm. And that's not generally how this works. So thank you for, you know, really actually going out there and doing the work, which is important. One thing with whatever rituals that you decide to go with, and I like this kind of rose idea, or if you want to work with like a self-love bath, you know, put some rose water in it, you know, things like that, you can do that. But what was going to be helpful and something that has helped me too in my mental health journey is working with affirmations, mm-hmm. because you have been told over and over and over again that you are evil or that you are not right or that there's something wrong with you that needs to be cleansed away from you. These things have been repeated to you over and over and over again. And when they get repeated, they begin to then sink down into your subconscious where they live forever. If you can counteract that by repeating to yourself things that you haven't heard in your life, like, I am good, or I am a positive force on this planet, or, you know, simply I am loved, or I am love, you know, to repeat these things over and over again, because you haven't had those things repeated to you in the way that you have had things like you're evil, you're dirty, you know, you're going to hell. All these things have been repeated to you. So you can counteract that and speak them out loud, because then your ears pick it up and then your brain picks it up as, you know, incoming new information. So saying these things over and over again to yourself, do it like while you're driving to work, mm-hmm. do it while you're in the shower or in the bathtub, or while you're doing these rituals, you know, like you're talking about the rituals with the rose, you know, incorporate these affirmations into it, because your brain is not used to hearing that you are a good person, that you are a positive force, you know, on this planet. And so to tell yourself that repeatedly so that your brain and your ears can finally get to hear this that you haven't heard before or haven't heard enough of is going to be so important for your healing. And honestly, it creates much more of a shift than you think it will. I felt crazy when I first started doing affirmations. I'm like, so I'm just going to talk to myself for a while. but then it really helped, just simply hearing the voice or kind of being that voice that you needed before that you weren't getting, you know, being your own person there in that mm-hmm. sense is really helpful.
Yeah. And I love that you shared that too, because I usually do this work in the morning. I've laughed on the podcast before. Like, I'll stand in front of the mirror naked and I'll be like, look at your body. You're gorgeous. You're so soft. And, you know, because it's like,
because you're so soft. You're so, oh, I love that.
Soft. Because you sleep and your whole body regenerates, your cells regenerate. So you wake up in the morning, truly, physically, new. Actually, mm-hmm. anew. Mm-hmm. And so to begin to feed that new self with these beautiful affirmations is a great way to start it.
Oh, yes. And also, if we then layer on the idea that our body is made mostly up of water, and water absorbs energy, my friends. Mm-hmm. So the more we talk to ourselves in this beautiful, amazing way, the more our body will absorb that energy and the better you will feel. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about flower essences when I said that, really. Mm-hmm. Rose flower essence could also be something. If you're somebody, you know, I'm an herbalist, so I come from this background of like, I like to take things, you know? So, mm-hmm. If you feel like you want to then, you know, do something actively on top of all these other beautiful suggestions, you know, just by finding some rose flower essence and then adding that to your water, you know, as an extra layer of affirmation too.
Well, your heart mender too, right?
Oh, my heart. Oh, yeah. Shit. Shit, girl. I make this remedy called heart mender. And
don't worry, I'll help you.
Oh, thanks, buddy. Yeah. So anyways, there's lots of different things that you can mm-hmm. do, but rose flower essence to me feels really mm-hmm. right with this. Rose flower essence is not an essential oil, and it's also not rose mm-hmm. water. So, you know, if you're looking for it, you know, you want to Google search or Etsy search or whatever flower essence, and that's what you'll be looking mm-hmm. for. Mm-hmm. All right. Jackie from Parts Unknown writes, what kind of herbal tea would you recommend to help one commune with or otherwise channel spirits? Should this be consumed before or during the session?
Oh, wow.
Any kind of teas and things to help boost your psychic abilities?
Occasionally, I found that they can be helpful, mm-hmm. especially if we're going to be channeling. Does she say if it's specifically spirits of the dead or?
There's no specifics in this, just spirits.
So when it comes to channeling, the kind of the brain space that you are in and the ability to relax is super important. So whenever we do any sort of like divination or psychic work, of course, mugwort is always the first one that comes to mind.
Because
mugwort is so great at really opening up all of those channels, opening up, you know, our third eye, opening up our psychic senses, is really helpful. But also I would maybe suggest going a little simpler too. Something as simple as chamomile mm-hmm. and really kind of ease us into that space that we need to be into. In order to, you know, channel as successfully as we want to. And it also isn't anything that's going to be kind of altering to our minds or anything like that. So we can still be very sharp while also being very relaxed and kind of allowing the channeling process to happen. Mm-hmm. If they are looking at doing channeling for spirits of the dead, I may also suggest doing like a mullein tea, because mullein and the dead really go hand in hand for in a lot of cultures. But when you do work with mullein, you know, in a tea, you're going to want to strain it really well,
because those little
hairs will irritate you real bad in the throat. Uh-huh. So definitely if you go that direction, strain it really well. But those would kind of be the three that I mm-hmm. would offer up as a place to start.
Yeah. Those are excellent. Yeah. And I would also add yarrow. Yarrow can also be really helpful in like a similar kind of essence or feeling as mugwort would be, but less mind altering, especially if you're doing any kind of writing mm-hmm. with your channeling.
Sure. Do you know, mm-hmm. I think sometimes too, like something that I've stepped into almost daily now is charming. I'll hold my hand over anything that I'm about to drink, especially my first morning's water. And just tell it.
Yeah.
This is what we're going to do. Again, it's water, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know? And so just charm it, set an intention. This is the work we're going to do. You're going to help me, you know, however you choose to kind of word that intention. But this has been something that I've just really added to part of my daily ritual work. It's just you know, setting that intention and charming it.
Yeah. I love that.
I love that too. So much. Oh, gorgeous.
Thank you so much.
You've been
wonderful.
So generous with your time and your knowledge. And I just want to say thank you. You know, thank you for being here with us today. How can our listeners find you and your work?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I've had a great time. So to find my work, it's pretty simple. I am working on a website. Yay. I am doing it myself, so it's taking a little bit longer than I had originally intended. However, that will be in the works soon. But for now, the best way to get in touch with me is through Instagram. My handle is @ Oregon Wood Witch with underscores between the words. That's the best place to find me. My DMs are open if you want to send me a question or book a service. I do offer services, so you can hire me to do spell work on your behalf or get a tarot reading from me. All kinds of good stuff is available there through my Instagram. And if you find me on Patheos, my column is called Cross and Crossroads, and that's where you can find all of my articles.
Wonderful. Awesome. Written pieces.
Yes.
And awesome. You have products too, don't you?
Oh, I do. I do have an Etsy store that you can find through a link on my Instagram. My Etsy store is called Woodwitch Apothecary, and I create kind of small batch items that people can call home, either, you know, protective charms. I make hanging wards. I make a lot of oils too that I use myself personally that I've made available for others too, as well as like spell kits or saint kits, things like that.
Awesome. Okay, great.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joshua.
Thank you.
It's the best. It's the best.
The Ask a Hag podcast is produced by Donna Kyler. Listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever else you listen. You can be part of the podcast too. Leave us a voice message on the Anchor FM app and we'll play it on the show. And don't forget to review us on Apple Podcasts. We love 5 stars so much. You can find this podcast on Instagram @ ask.a.hag or @ askahagpodcast.com.
Thanks again.
Thank you.